philosophy of life. Krita anta antika bhakti. Always given the facility for death. Jivitam, the duration of life. Yaya, by such material opulence. Adruvam, as temporary. Stabdamati, such an unintelligent person. Nabudyate, cannot understand. Translation. Only by providence have I been forcibly brought under your lotus feet and deprived of all my opulence. Because of the illusion created by temporary opulence, people in general, who live under material conditions, facing accidental death at every moment, do not understand that this life is temporary. Only by providence have I been saved from that condition. Purport by His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Bali Maharaj appreciated the actions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although all the members of the demoniac families except Prahlad and Bali Maharaj considered Vishnu their eternal traditional enemy, as described by Bali Maharaj, Lord Vishnu was actually not the enemy of the family, but the best friend of the family. The principle of this friendship has already been stated. Yasyaham anigrihanami padisher tadram shanai. The Lord bestows special favor upon his devotee by taking away all his material opulences. Bali Maharaj appreciated this behavior by the Lord. Therefore he said, Daivena nita prasibham chayati shri. It is to bring me to the right platform of eternal life that you have put me into these circumstances. Actually, everyone should fear the so-called society, friendship, and love for which he works so hard all day and night, as indicated by Bali Maharaj by the words Janarbita. Every devotee in Krishna consciousness should always be afraid of the common man engaged in pursuing material prosperity. Such a person is described as pramata, a madman, chasing the will of the wisp. Such men do not know that after a hard struggle for life, one must change his body with no certainty of what kind of body he will receive next. Those who are completely established in Krishna consciousness philosophy and who therefore understand the aim of life will never take to the activities of the materialistic dog race. But if a sincere devotee somehow falls down, the Lord corrects him and saves him from gliding down to the darkest region of hellish life. The materialistic way of life is nothing but the repeated chewing of that which has already been chewed. Although there is no profit in such a life, people are enamored of it because of the uncontrolled senses. Because of uncontrolled senses, people fully engage in sinful activities by which they get a body full of suffering. Bali Maharaj appreciated how the Lord had saved him from such a bewildered life of ignorance. He therefore said that his intelligence had been stunned. He could not understand how the Supreme Personality of Godhead favors his devotee by forcibly stopping their materialistic activities. Translation again, please repeat. Only by providence have I been forcibly brought under your lotus feet and deprived of all my opulence. Because of the illusion created by temporary opulence, people in general who live under material conditions, facing accidental death at every moment do not understand that this life is temporary. Only by providence have I been saved from that condition. Om Aganatiramandasya Ganatana Shalakaya Chakshuru Maritamina Tasma Sri Gudaraya Namaha. There is no hardship too great for those who are craving to reestablish their eternal relationship with Krishna, and by so doing, establish that essential crux for relationships with all others, including one's own self. The ordeals that devotees encounter on the path back home is more challenging than pursuit of materialistic goals, because as Bali Maharaj is explaining here, even he feels bewildered by how the Lord takes everything away from his devotee. And usually we refer and think of what he takes away as our opulences. But he takes everything. He takes away our sins, our sinful reactions, our sinful proclivities, and all the sufferings that ensue from those inclinations. He takes away possessions, family, false prestige. He takes away the coverings under which we hide. We wonder, where is Krishna hiding? Even Narada Muni asked him that question, and where he could be found. And he said, whenever devotees come together to chant my holy names, it's not that Krishna's hiding, it's that we hide in a maze of doubts and insecurities and conceal ourselves under this cloak of falsehood, false pride, false humility. And thus the Lord takes away our false sense of security and happiness. Why? So that we can chant his holy name with feeling, so that we can realize that we are totally dependent on his mercy. We've been discussing, and we'll probably continue, how Lord Chaitanya, being the avatari, he roamed through all the different moods of the various avatars. Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, Ram, Ramachandra, Buddha, Krishna and Balaram, and finally Kalki. And we know there were many occasions when he would just become wildly intoxicated and scream out, bring me wine, bring me wine. And Lord Nityananda, Srivas Thakur, they knew what this meant. And he would always be satisfied with Ganges water. Because he's teaching through pastime and precept that what we're really thirsting for is rasa. What we're really hungry for is bhakti. As Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati would say, and Srila Prabhupada in his own words, there's really only one famine in all the world. It's starvation for Krishna consciousness. All other shortages stem from that deficiency in consciousness. So we thirst for rasa, We hunger for bhakti, and the holy name is our very life breath, Lord Chaitanya's teaching. So, we've been proceeding into this enchanting realm of Lord Chaitanya's Leela, and then coming back a little bit, and then going further in, and then coming back to assimilate and cross-reference, and then going further. We're at the point now that the Sankirtan movement has begun. Shortly after the arrival of Lord Nityananda, who waited until Lord Chaitanya took sannyas? I mean, took initiation and gave the order to preach before he ever preached. He never preached before that. And then, because Advaita is waiting for the Lord to call him and proclaim his supreme majesty, glory, and opulences, he was tricked into doing so, because he normally wouldn't, but Advaita wanted to hear that. And then Advaita came. Gadadhar was always there, as was Srivas Pandit. And Haridas Thakur also joined the banner of Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan. So then, the Lord summons, especially Lord Nityananda and Haridas Thakur as his primary generals, so to speak, to lead up the preaching door to door. And in the mood of little children, and Lord Nityananda was usually in that mood, under his influence, Haridas Thakur felt a similar mood. Yeah, they go door to door, and some people would respect them. Oh, these are sadhus. Others would chastise them. Others would blaspheme them. Others would, you know, assault them. And then when they saw the big commotion surrounding Jagga and Madhai, what is this? And the people told them, don't go there. You know, they have no discretion when it comes to killing brahmanas and gurus and cows and matajis. There's no sinful activity that they haven't overindulged in. So don't think you'll have an audience with them. So Lord Nityananda took that as an opportunity. So he gave them the message, gave everyone. Bola Krishna, Vaja Krishna, Krishna Koda Siksha, Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Pradada. And from their drunken stupor, when they were fighting with each other, this is the nature of materialistic love. You know, they'd always be out fighting somebody. If they couldn't find anybody to fight with, they'd fight with each other. And they looked up, who is preaching to us? And in a rage, they lunged at these two sadhus to kill them. And then Lord Nityananda just took off. Haridas Thakur this time was quite elderly. He couldn't run so fast, so Lord Nityananda took it by the hand. Let's get out of here, as these demons are chasing in hot pursuit, chanting, Bakalo, Bakalo, catch them, catch them. And then Haridas Thakur said, why? Amongst all these innocent people, did you have to choose these two? Because we're going to lose our lives and we won't be preaching to anyone. You're a madman. No, it's not me. It's your Lord Gauranga. He's acting, you know, he's supposed to be a sadhu, but he's acting like a king, you know, ordering us where to go and what to do. And he's, but you're used to this kind of thing, you know, referring to the Muslim executioners exhausting themselves in their attempt to execute Haridas Thakur in the most humiliating manner. And Krishna protected you. He said, but I don't think he'll protect us today, because this was insane to go to these two to preach. And he said, well, anyway, let's not argue about it. Let's just get out of here. And when they passed by Srivatsanga and made a quick turn into the house, Jagga and Mare, they didn't notice, and they kept chasing him down the street, and they lost track, and then they started fighting with each other again. And then they had to report every day to Mahaprabhu how the preaching went. And Lord Chaitanya said it was very good. And Haridas Thakur said, that's not my interpretation. He said, do you know the nature of this avadhut? You know, some days he climbs on a wandering bull and rides around telling all the Matajis they should marry him. He's supposed to be a sannyasi. And he'll go into an open field and milk somebody's cow, and the cowherd man comes and he runs away. I get caught. And you know, in the of course, I'm elaborating a little bit on his basic, but he said, well, anyway, he can't resist jumping in the Ganges if he sees crocodiles, because he has to play with them. You know, he's right at home in the Ganga, because he's an antishesh, but he has to play with the crocodiles. And I'm on the shore chanting, help, help, and he's just laughing. And on he went. And his conclusion was, if you send me out to preach with this partner again, I won't go. And Mahaprabhu, he's just becoming more and more and more ecstatic hearing the avadhut pastimes. And why? It's not just entertainment. There are avadhutas in the Vaishnav line. And what is their characteristics? A marked disinterest in material activities, social prestige, class distinctions, and an absorption just in the essence of transcendental life, which is rasa. So, who's Jagga and Mare? You know, the Srimad Bhagavatam tells us that Jaya and Vijaya took three different births as Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Shishupal, and Dantavakra, who are the personification of Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Madhavatsarya, and were liberated by the different avatars. But they came back a fourth time, but because Bhua Lila is confidential, it wasn't mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that all the lust, anger, greed, pride, delusion, and envy embodied by all those different demons was contained in one form named Jaghai. And Madhai was worse because he added on top of everything else Guru Aparad. What does Aparad mean? It means distancing from Radha, the personification of worship. So, Lord Chaitanya said, you know, who are these two? And then Srivas began to explain, oh, I know them. If they cross my path, I will cut them to pieces with my Sudarshan Chakra. And that statement moved Lord Nityananda to tears. He said, I'm not impressed by that. Because people glorify you as Patita Pavana, and that name will be worthy only if you can deliver those two. And I won't go anywhere else for preaching. But Haridas was true to his word. He didn't go out with Lord Nityananda when he returned to Jagai Madai, at which time he was attacked. But meanwhile, Jagga and Madai, who would just roam throughout Navadvipa, they were supposed to be the sheriffs. and they just camp out in different regions. And when they heard the kirtan from Sri Vasangam, they thought, what a beautiful song. And they were so intoxicated, but they began to dance to the sound of the kirtan. That was their Agyata Sukriti. And Lord Nityananda, wandering alone at night after preaching, walking right through their camp. And who's that? And they call me Avadhut. They recognized the voice and attacked him to kill him. And you know the story. And, you know, this was coinciding with the time that Mahaprabhu was really beginning to feel the gravity of the situation, the deplorable decadence in Nadia, degenerating from bad to worse, and how he longed to spread the Sankirtan movement throughout the length and breadth of his hometown. So after, you know the story, they were delivered. And after their deliverance, the demigods who were watching very attentively everything transpiring in Nadia, and then, with the deliverance of Jagai and Madhai, Yamaraj, aboard his chariot, just fainted in ecstasy. And, you see, this was a dilemma, because all along, during the pastimes, there were pastimes of Jagai and Madhai, in Yamaraj's kingdom, he had 100,000 accountants keeping track of the sinful activities of Jagai and Madhai. They had to work day and night, and they couldn't keep track. And the Yamadutas would report back every day, okay, add this much to the list. The accountants were so exhausted, when they saw the Yamadutas coming, they just beat them up, you know, get out of here, we don't want to hear it. So there's great turmoil in Yamaraj's court. Now Yamaraj is unconscious, and how will his function continue? So the demigods came down, surrounded Yamaraj and his chariot, and began kirtan. And Lord Brahma commented that this deliverance of Jagai and Madhai has placed a seed of great hope in my heart that even I can be delivered. Interesting. Anyway, in that kirtan, Shukadeva Goswami was chanting the names of Jagai and Madhai. And Lord Shiva lost his clothes, Indra lost his thunderbolt, Narada lost his veena, and Ananta was dancing with Garuda. No snake would ordinarily dance with Garuda because he eats snakes. But it was a very unconventional kirtan. And after that, Jagai and Madhai took up residence, well not residence, but they spent most of their time in Sri Vasangam, and they were chanting 200,000 names daily, and were very exalted devotees. But they were constantly rebuking themselves for their previous hideous, vicious, cruel deeds which inflicted so much misery on countless living entities. And Lord Chaitanya and his devotees were so kind and always reassuring them that they've been forgiven. And in their repentance, they were so austere that they wouldn't even eat. And Lord Chaitanya was always encouraging, please take prasad. So Jagai got over it. Madhai did not. He was so morose because of what he had done to Lord Nityananda. Then he understood what to do. So when Lord Nityananda was wandering alone, in the mood of a young child, as he always did, just very simple, humble and innocent, and alone, Madhai fell at his feet, clasped those lotus feet, and prayed that as Vishnu, you are the protector of the world. As Ananta, you uphold all the worlds. And of Bhakti, you are the proprietor. It is your treasure, and you can bestow it. You who are praised by Narada, who pleases Lord Chaitanya to such an extent that he accepts only you as his bed, his throne, his parasol, the treasure of his life. And I know that devotees and the avatars who are in that mood of devotees have this characteristic of being soft as a rose and hard as a thunderbolt. I know that it is from your anger that Rudra was born, and yet you are so soft that Lord Chaitanya lies down to take rest on your form of his bed. You who are so purifying that remembrance of you frees one from all bondage, who awarded that perfection to Chitraketu in the midst of his lamentation over the loss of his dear son. You who bestowed upon the sages of Naimisharanya freedom from death. And I know how you deal with those who are inimical. By offending you, Indrajit ran to his death, as did Dravida Parish, as well as Rukmi. And Ramaharshan Sutta, though blessed with the lifetime of Brahma, met instant death simply by neglecting you. And when Duryodhana insulted you, no one can save him. So by comparison with what I did to you, what is the type of hell worthy of my residence? But still clasping the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, he prayed, one who holds these feet to his heart will never perish. But I am such a cruel and ungrateful serpent. So Lord Nityananda, looking down upon him with such childlike innocence, said, Madhai, I've accepted you as my child. If an infant son accidentally hits his father, he does not take offense. And that statement plunged Madhai into a deeper level of repentance. And he said, he revealed his heart. It goes deeper than that. Because I know that as a super soul, you expand and manifest your heart, yourself, in the hearts of innumerable living entities. And I've offended them all. And the scriptures tell us that if we offend anyone, especially a Vaishnava, we should beg their forgiveness. But how to find them? How to recognize them? How to beg from them? Most of the time being in drunken stupor or wrathful rage, I wasn't even aware of who I was killing and torturing. And since most of them died at my hands, how to find them? Where are they now? How would I recognize them? How can I fulfill this mandate of the scripture to beg forgiveness from all those who I've offended when I can't count them, when I could never find them? What to do? He said, and day and night I'm tormented by the screams of my victims, my fellow human beings, haunted by those agonizing forms of those who are subject to my torture. And like endless wave of the Ganges, they are continually battering me to take their revenge. So he understood that he needed a deeper level of forgiveness than what Lord Chaitanya had assured him, that he had to go to those individuals. But how is that possible? Lord Nityananda smiled with satisfaction. And he told Madhai, it's similar to Indra after he attacked all the Brijavasis. And Brihaspati told him that if you take one Surabhi cow, she can serve as the representative of all the Brijavasis and award you forgiveness on their behalf. So in a similar way, Lord Nityananda told Madhai, if you serve the Ganges, whose endless waves wash away all sins, serve the Ganges by serving the pilgrims who come to the Ganges, and offer your respectful obeisances to each and every one of them. Ask forgiveness, beg forgiveness, if you have knowingly or unknowingly offended them, and if you can please them by your sincerity and humility, that will relieve you of the guilt that is tormenting you. That's what Madhai wanted to hear. And circumambulating Lord Nityananda, taking a spade in his hand, he began carving out the steps and laying the stones to make what is still glorified today as Madhai Ghat. And the residents of Nadia, who had all been, you know, terrorized Jagga and Madhai for years, they were wondering, is this real? Is this going to last? Should be taken seriously. So one of the residents takes a stone and hurls it at Madhai and strikes his body. And that gives him great pleasure because it did not disturb his equilibrium. Now, formerly, if somebody had struck Madhai, you know the consequences. So he smiled and thanked that person and handed back the stone. And he tried to suppress the tears of gratitude he felt. But everyone who saw Madhai was moved to tears. And he assured them, yes, it's me. This is not an act. This is genuine. This is Madhai, who in the pride of my passion and power trampled everything sacred underfoot. And now I'm begging you to trample me underfoot. And confer upon me that blessing. And those crowds who hated Jagga and Madhai so bitterly felt all their enmity dissipated like the morning gloom and fog with the rising of the sun. He said, yes, I'm a great sinner, but the Lord has accepted me as his servant on the condition that all of you, his servants, forgive me as well. And he assured them that yes, it is a miracle how the worst demon who was chosen to bear witness to the infinite kindness and goodness of Lord Gauranga. A service that naturally was conferred upon me. Do you need to see proof and evidence of this principle? Look at the devotees. Look at the servants of the Lord. And for generations afterwards, the descendants of Madhai are proud of their ancestors who bore testimony to the greatest love and mercy this world has ever known. Now, as the Sankirtan movement progressed, so too did the opposition. And after Jagai and Mata became great devotees, a worse threat presented itself. Because with the deliverance of Jagai and Mata was the first public kirtan outside of the locked doors to Sri Vasangam. So then Chankazi, and you know that whole Leela. But not many could understand, you know, why is Mahaprabhu calling him uncle? You know, Chankazi said, well, your grandfather was my friend, so you're like my nephew. And if an uncle commits offense, a nephew doesn't take it seriously. And if the nephew makes a mistake, the uncle's not upset. But the more intimate devotees could see that Kamsa has returned. He's not being killed by the Lord. But when Chankazi, who is Kamsa, acting under orders from the Nawab Hushain Shah, who is Jarasandha, to attack, not just with a few, you know, thugs, but with thousands of those brutal, vicious, ferocious Afghan Mughals whose creed was the destruction of the infidels, which they were told was their passport to heaven, and all their 77 or however many virgins came with that entrance. A very formidable enemy. And now, you know, being assured of Chankazi's protection and seeing how Lord Gauranga, with, you know, thousands of devotees armed only with cartels and flower garlands and madangas, confronted the king of those brutal Afghans, whose mere presence intimidates anyone because of their, you know, deep-seated cruelty. He confronted him with all his cannons and weapons and swords and trained soldiers, humbled him before the world, confronted him in his own palace, and yet won over his heart. Because the name is mightier than the sword. And with his vowed protection for the devotees in the Sankirtan parties, the movement, of course, and then later actually taking the Sankirtan party right to the palace gates of the Nawab Hushain Shah himself and said, who is this Mahaprabhu? Oh, and, you know, oh, he's just some beggar. No, he was a devotee minister who was trying to protect the Lord. He's just some beggar. Don't take him. What? Don't talk about him like that. He is Allah, who the Hindus call Krishna. He's come to bless my kingdom by his presence. And how do I know? Because I have so many servants and ministers and courtiers. But if I stop paying them, who will be left? They'll all leave me. He has unlimited followers. He doesn't pay anybody anything. They don't even know where they're going to sleep, if they're going to eat, anything, but that's not some beggar. That is Allah, the Lord. And I give my order that the Nawab Hussein Shah, independent emperor of Bengal, issues his mandate that if anyone harasses or impedes him in his free will to do whatever he likes, I will have his head chopped off. Just on that impression, he understood that this is God. So, but, you know, in Krishna Leela and other Leelas of the other avatars, you know, the demons came with armies and were vanquished by, you know, weapons of the Lord's own armies. When the demons take over the consciousness, then Krishna Varam Trisa Krishnam Sangha Pankushaparshanam. He comes not with armies and weapons, but with devotees in the holy name to kill the demoniac mentality. Now, in Navadvip, there was an undercurrent of those who actually never met him, but heard twisted accounts of what's going on, which just fueled their insecurities and fears, mainly the Brahmin community, because they had, you know, a powerful sway over society, for which they were lavishly rewarded with prestige and power and opulence. They did not want to give up that stronghold. And in Navadvip, you know, it used to be the scholar to whom everyone had to show their respects. Now, they didn't even notice the pundits, because it became clear that the highest man is the servant. It's not the pundit. It's not the smarta. It's not the king or the emperor. It's the servant. Now, this was very intimidating to the smarta and the student community, who weren't interested that the life and soul of all knowledge is Harinam Sankirtan. So one of the students came upon Nimai Pandit one day when he was chanting the names of the cows. No one. He said, Nimai, you should chant the holy name of Krishna. The scriptures tell us to chant Krishna's name, and there is great piety in chanting Krishna's name. What piety is there in chanting names of cows and gopis and Jamuna? And that wasn't the right time to give that instruction to the Lord, because he was so deeply immersed in the mellows of separation. Now, we've been talking about how, you know, Parakya above awards the full spectrum of rasas and adventure and charm and pleasure to Krishna. But in that realm of Parakya, the most intense expression of love is in separation. Separate a calf from her mother and see how the love flares. And that is how Krishna deals with his devotees. He not only takes away all your illusory possessions, he himself withdraws himself from your vision. And he can be called cruel and ungrateful and hard-hearted. But why? Because when the Lord withdraws from our external perception, or take it conversely, when you come before your beloved Lord and pour out everything in your heart in gratitude, everything that's internal goes out. But when he disappears, everything goes internal and is nurtured and expands within. Lord Gauranga was in that internal bhava of relishing within the mellows of Vrindavan due to deep feelings of separation from Vrindavan. And when this student challenged him, "Why are you chanting the names of cows?" he was not in the mood to appreciate that. So he rose up. And Lord Gauranga was 7 feet tall. Bengalis are not usually that big because they're just designed for a kirtan. And the pundits never wield any bigger weapon than a pen. So, you know, he was giving his challenge based on intellectual superiority and self-righteous false prestige. But when the Lord rose up in a furious mood, he ran for his life. And the Lord was running, "Stop, stop." And somehow he escaped the Lord, just out of breath and sweating profusely and trembling like a leaf in the wind. And the students, "What happened?" He was white as a ghost. Now, I heard that this Nimai Pandit was a saint. I just went for some association, and seeing that he was chanting the names of cows, out of compassion, I just asked him to chant the name of Krishna, and he went into a rage and tried to kill me. And only by providence did I escape that you could even hear about it. And I tell you, don't go around him. And then he started criticizing this Nimai Pandit. He thinks he's the son of some big Brahmin. We are also the sons of Brahmins. We have Brahminical powers. We're pandits. We should band together to unite against him. You know, Nimai wasn't there to witness the discussion, but he felt it. And his mood changed. He became very grave. And he told Lord Nityananda that, "I came to give the medicine for the disease, but it's aggravating the disease instead." So, and of course, the worst thing is while he was chasing the Brahmin, the Brahmin told his friends, he was blaspheming Krishna. When he heard the name Krishna, he said, "What? Don't tell me to chant the name of Krishna. Krishna is an ingrate. He's ungrateful. Just look at Bali. Bali didn't do anything wrong in Ramayana, Bali. He didn't do anything wrong. And Lord Ram, you know, I know, not only about this lifetime, but many other lifetimes, I know about Krishna. I heard about him from my grandmother, Purnamasi, how in Ram Lila, he shot Bali while he was hiding behind a tree. He didn't even face him like a Kshatriya. And Bali didn't even do anything wrong. He just killed him. Like a coward." And when that simple, chaste, innocent lady, Suparnika, approached him to serve, he cut off her nose. Nobody would marry her after that. And you're telling me to worship and chant his name? And when Bali Maharaj offered him everything he had, he still wasn't satisfied and pushed him down to hell. So the pundit was telling his friends, he's blasphemous. So Mahaprabhu told him, "The medicine is not working. It's not relieving the disease. It's aggravating it. I wanted to award them freedom. It's just increasing their bondage. But if I come back to them as a beggar, as a sannyasi, that will disarm them of their envy." Lord Nityananda just had to leave and go to a secluded place, and he just fell down crying uncontrollably. And he could finally speak again. He went to Nimai and said, So you're going to kill Mother Sachi? That's what it means. And then the word got around to the devotees. He's going to shave off his hair. And they told him, how can you do that? Do you realize, just take that one aspect, his long, wavy, beautiful hair, which cascades down his shoulders and highlights his moon-like face. Do you know how it sustains us to tie that hair into a top knot and decorate it with flowers and with garlands and to comb it and to inhale the fragrance and to anoint it with oil, just that one aspect? How can you cut that off? But the main thing is, how are you going to teach religion if the beginning of your mission is killing Mother Sachi? And the devotees are plunged into a grief like they could never have imagined. So he gathered them together and said, don't think like that. I could never leave you, not for one moment. And I will always be with you, not in one form, but in two forms, as the deity form and the form of my holy name. Mother Sachi could not stop crying, sobbing uncontrollably. And she asked him the same thing. If you begin your mission by killing your mother, what kind of religion are you teaching? He said, my husband's already gone back to Godhead. My eldest son took sannyas. I have nothing but you to sustain my life. You're more dear to me than my life. And you're going to leave me? And he told him, I never leave you. You're eternally my mother. When you were Kaushalya, I was your Ram and forever your son. When you were Prishni, I was Prishnagarbha. When you were Aditi, I was Vamana. When you were Devahuti, I was Kapila. When you were imprisoned in Kamsa's dungeon, I came to you there and set you free. But now it's special because you will have two sons, or I will have two mothers. The earth goddess is you, Mother Sachi, the mother of my deity. And the spiritual tongue of everyone is my mother to the holy name. So when the eventful day arrived, all the devotees were drawn from everywhere like magnets to Sachi's house. And they all brought garlands which they placed on the Lord, which he took off and placed back on them with his loving embrace that ensured them that everything is fine. And deep, deep in the night, he was thinking, I've fulfilled my final exchange with all the devotees of Nadia. Tonight is clear, and I will leave. And then there was Kolavet Sridhar. And you know those series of pastimes. Harass Sridhar to no end. And finally Sridhar would break down. Nimai, we shouldn't fight like this. What can I do to pacify you? He said, if you give me that pumpkin, the one that grows on your house, I'll leave you alone. I'll never hurt you. Please take it. And he would always bring a pumpkin. Remember what you said. You won't hurt me. So here comes Kolavet Sridhar with a pumpkin. And the Lord was thwarted. I told him I wouldn't hurt him. And I'm leaving tomorrow. How will I eat the pumpkin? And he liked the pumpkins prepared as pumpkin sweet rice. And there was no milk in the house. And then there's another, somebody else with a pot of milk. So Mother Sachi, you know, they had eaten so much that night because all the devotees brought offerings. So Mother Sachi, make pumpkin sweet rice. They had pumpkin sweet rice. And the Lord had told the devotees, you can show your love for me by how you sing with feeling the holy name of Krishna, congregationally. And always remember Krishna while you're eating, while you're sleeping, whatever you're doing. Always remember Krishna. Never forget him. This is the essence of all knowledge. And then we was leaving in the middle of the night. And Satchi was sobbing in the doorway. He told her that you, my eternal mother who has always protected and nurtured me, who I can never repay for your love, take your leave. And the grief that ensued in Nadia when the sun rose the next morning and they realized it's all empty and void. Even the blasphemers repented. And the separation made even the stones melt and dry wood to cry. So when the devas were crying and the wind stopped blowing and the Ganges stopped flowing and the birds stopped singing, how is this for the benefit of the world? Because he was introducing the concept of separation. So, approaching Keshava, Keshava Bharati, the sannyas guru, and he told him that in my dream last night some exalted being appeared and gave me this mantra. And he spoke the mantra into the ears of Keshava. And he said, yes, that's the proper mantra. He spoke that mantra back into the ear of the Lord. And the devotees were amazed that after he shaved his head and came back from the Ganges in saffron attire, he was even more beautiful than ever before. And thus he fulfilled that verse in the Mahabharata. So Keshava Bharati was thinking, what name can I give him? I can't give him a Bharati name because he's not the servant of Bharati. What name should I give him? And Gada Saraswati whispered in his heart, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, which means he will bring life to the world by the kirtan of Krishna. And with that name, flowers fell from the sky. And the devotees again floated in an ocean of bliss. And anyone who hears this pastime will be freed from all the bondage of material existence. And then, of course, as a sannyasi, we'll make this very brief because it's getting late, but he had to return to bathe in the Ganges. But he also had to visit Kumar Hutt, the birthplace of Ishwara Puri, where he fell down on the ground and took some of the dust in his cloth and ate some every day with a prayer. This dust is my life, my soul, my treasure, because this dust is from the earth where Ishwara Puri was pleased to descend upon this world. And then next he went to Kashrivas. He couldn't, and all his brothers, they couldn't live in Nadia. After Mahaprabhu left, all those Leelasthans which gave them such joy became sources of unbearable anguish. They couldn't live there. So they went to Kumar Hutt. So Mahaprabhu came to his house. And after the initial reception and long Sankirtan parties, Mahaprabhu took Srivas to a secluded place and said, I'm worried about you. You never go out of the house. You never beg. You don't have a job. You have a large family. How will you provide for them? He said, this is getting back to this Bhagavatam verse about destiny. He said, destiny brings whatever we need. Well, what about the future? By destiny. everything we need, it just comes to the door. We don't know how, but it does. Oh, Srivas, you should take sannyas. No, I have no qualification. Well, at least just go out and beg and ask for alms and whatever you need to feed your family. Otherwise, how you will feed them? And then he just clapped his hands three times, saying, 1, 2, 3. That's how. What? I don't understand. What does that mean, this 1, 2, 3? He said, because this is my solemn vow, that if ever 3 meals in a row, I don't have what I want to eat, then I'll drown myself in the Ganges. And Lord Gauranga got up, began to roar, and he repeated the exact thing he said in Navadvipa after that whole thing about the 2 boatloads of Muslims coming down from the Nawab to, you know, that whole thing. The same thing he said. If that day ever comes that Lakshmi Devi herself has to go out begging for alms, if scarcity and poverty ever inflicts the world to that degree, Srivas Thakur will never experience it. Why? Because Bhakti is the supreme queen. She has so many maidservants, piety, happiness, wisdom, everything comes to the house of the devotee and never leaves him. My Sudarshan Chakra eternally protects the devotees. Even when the universe is destroyed, no harm ever befalls my devotees. And remember what I said in Bhagavad Gita? That those who worship me with exclusive devotion, always meditating on my transcendental form, I provide what they have and preserve. And bring what they lack. But then he expanded upon that. He said, furthermore, anyone who remembers and serves my devotee, I will provide for him and personally feed him and protect him. And above and beyond that, he attains me at the end of life, if not before. So then he called for Ramai Pandit, Ramai. Always serve Srivas. And as if he's as good as the Lord. And that brings us back to that wonderful conversation between Damodar Pandit and Mararigupta. And Mararigupta told how one day this pure-hearted Brahmana came to Mother Sati's house and she gave that Vedalam Pan to Nimai. He ate that, he honored that, and then he went to Mother Sachi and he told her, I'm going home now. Serve this Brahmin as your son. And he fell down lifeless on the floor. Mother Sachi poured Ganges water into his mouth, and he came back to life and illuminated the whole house by his effulgence. That's the end of the pastime. But Lochandas Thakur says, this really needs some explanation, but who can give it? Well, Damodar Pandit asked, what does that mean? And Mararigupta said, you think I know? The Lord Chaitanya's Leela is too profound for me to explain what it means, but I'll offer some explanation, and if it's reasonable to you, then you can accept it with faith. The Lord enters into the hearts of his devotees through Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Sevanam. And from within, because the sacramental word is what it says. You know, that's the difference between regular language and sacramental. It becomes what it is. It crystallizes what it says. It conveys what it is. Because it's absolute. Mararigupta explained that the Lord considers the worship of his devotees superior to his worship. And he longs to serve his servants. Why? Because in the hearts of the devotees is Ladini Shakti, which is dormant, but it awakens when you, as you develop an attitude of service towards the devotees, Then the foremost of all Braj devotees, Srimati herself, looks at that with great appreciation, and by her merciful glance, her own Ladini Shakti is awakened within the heart and manifests in the form of love of God, which is what it is about the devotees that so much attracts Krishna. They have that Ladini Shakti in their hearts. We have Krishna in our heart as Super Soul. We also have Ladini Shakti, but she's dormant in our conditioned state, and she becomes awakened and grows and eventually reaches maturity as we serve the devotees. So Krishna, Mauryagupta continued, reveals himself and performs pastimes in the hearts of his devotees. He's equal to all, but he reciprocates according to our surrender, our attitude, and our intent. And that's why devotees, in all ordeals, Krishna says, Matasparsha Stukantaya, happiness and distress come like the winter and summer. Learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. Do you ever get disturbed? It doesn't mean your mind and senses won't be disturbed. They're always disturbed. It means let not your intent, your purpose, your goal be disturbed, but fixed like a mariner's course on the North Star. The body of the Lord, the body of the devotee is the temple of the Lord. His heart is the inner sanctum sanctorum. And as the Ganges purifies everything by her waves, the dust of the feet of the devotees purifies by its unfailing influence and confers upon us the treasure of the heart carried by those great souls. So, therefore, in approaching Sri Gaurapurnima, which Vrindavadas Thakur says is the, along with Nityananda Trayodasi, the most important days of the year, we add Sri Vyas Puja, which appropriately came on Nandotsava, because Krishna was born at midnight, and even Mother Jashoda was not aware. It is Nandotsava, when the word was proclaimed throughout all the land that Krishna has come. It was that Nandotsava when Srila Prabhupada appeared to spread that message worldwide. And as Rupanugas, we follow in the footsteps of Rupa Manjari. As Prabhupada Nugas, we follow in the footsteps of His Divine Grace and the dust of His lotus feet. Is the most cherished treasure, because he is that Senapati Bhakta which Lord Gauranga in Goloka told Srivas will chase after those souls who flee the flood of the Sankirtan movement to hide in the western lands where he would come to deliver them. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? I'm sorry it's late. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.